From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on This Day in Maine, Wednesday, October 15th, 2025. Farmers and farm residents in Maine whose soil and water meet a certain threshold for PFAS contamination are now eligible for free blood testing. It's the latest program offered by a state-administered PFAS fund created 3 years ago. Fund director Beth Valentine says the testing is geared toward commercial farmers.
They have to be a commercial farm or have worked on a commercial farm or be a non-farm resident whose exposure to PFAS can be linked back to the land application of biosolids or sludge.
She says without the program, the blood tests would typically cost between $400 and $600. Education advocates in Maine say they're concerned about the Trump administration's move Friday to furlough almost all of the support staff in the Office of Special Education Programs, or OSEP, within the U.S. Department of Education. Carrie Woodcock, executive director of the Maine Parent Foundation, says that without federal oversight, the state may fall out of compliance with special ed requirements.
They're not getting pressure from OSEP, then they're not necessarily putting the pressure on your local school districts to ensure that our students with disabilities are receiving the free and appropriate public education that they deserve under IDEA.
Woodcock says that office is also in charge of several grants that support special education students and families across the state. The bottled water giant Poland Spring is cutting back water withdrawals at a few springs around Maine because of the drought. The company says in a statement that it significantly reduced water withdrawals from Clear Spring in Hollis at the beginning of September and cut back water usage at the Evergreen Spring in Freiburg. Conditions at other springs are being monitored daily using National Weather Service and other drought forecasting tools. Poland Spring scaled back extraction at some sites earlier this summer, and some municipalities have measures in place to protect water resources. Poland Spring says it will continue to provide bottled water to areas affected by dry wells. More than two-thirds of Maine is now experiencing either severe or extreme drought. The Northeast Wilderness Trust says it has now protected 100,000 acres of wildlands in the region, including nearly 48,000 acres in Maine. The trust says it's been working to conserve wildlands for more than two decades, and a recent project in New Hampshire helped it reach this milestone. Spokesperson Richard Knox says the land, which stretches from the Berkshires in Connecticut to the North Woods of Maine, stores about 9 million metric tons of carbon, and it also provides habitat for plants and animals that are forced to migrate due to climate change.
Maybe wetter or drier, these species need a place to go. So having a place for the wild creatures and plants to move and migrate to is really important, and wilderness areas in particular are an excellent avenue for that to happen.
Knox says the trust's next goal is to preserve an additional 60,000 acres by the end of the decade. Peak fall colors in Maine are expected to wrap up a week early, according to foliage experts at the State Department of Agriculture. When the days shorten and temperatures drop, trees start to break down chlorophyll, the chemical that keeps the leaves green. Fall foliage spokesperson Gail Ross says the lack of groundwater is impacting trees' ability to break down chlorophyll, especially in maples.
The maples are a shallow-rooted tree, so they require more water as opposed to, we'll say, an oak tree that's a little more deep-rooted.
Despite rain in some parts of the state this week, the U.S. Drought Monitor says the entire state is now experiencing at least abnormally dry weather. The last time extreme drought was this widespread in Maine was in 2002. Dozens of ratepayers turned out in Freeport Tuesday to speak out against a proposed electricity rate hike sought by Central Maine Power. CMP says the increase is needed to fund critical upgrades to the grid. Molly Anking has more.
A group of protesters converged outside the Freeport Town Hall an hour before the Maine Public Utilities Commission hearing. They carried signs that read, "Fight the hike" and "Stop CMP corporate handouts." Central Maine Power's proposed rate hike would take place over the course of 5 years and cost about $35 more per month for the average Maine household. The company, which services nearly 700,000 customers, says it will help pay for needed improvements, such as tree trimming, storm cost recovery, and expansions to the grid and to the customer service staff, all aimed at making the system more reliable and resilient. Former state Democratic lawmaker Seth Berry, who serves as executive director of Our Power, a Maine energy nonprofit, says he's never seen such a steep rate hike. And he says CMP already makes enough of a profit to cover its own costs.
A big question is, yes, we all know we need to invest in the grid, but where should the money come from? Should it come from the profits of the company, which right now are about $200 million a year that we're sending out of the country? Or should they come out of the pockets of Maine people?
Inside the Freeport Meeting House, dozens of people gave formal statements to members of the Public Utilities Commission, all speaking against the proposal. John Hafner of Old Orchard Beach runs his local Veterans of Foreign Wars outpost and says he's worried the rate increases would substantially affect his organization's ability to deliver on their mission. He says it would kill his outpost.
Our bill is disgustingly high. It's unbelievable how much we pay, and we could be giving that to the actual veterans in our community.
Others who testified pointed out that Central Maine Power is a subsidiary of a foreign-owned company, taking in substantial annual profits. Maine Public Advocate Heather Sanborn says the outpouring of opposition to the proposal should tell the utility that its plan is just too expensive.
We heard from folks that are struggling to pay for their groceries and are really worried about their neighbors. That was the theme that really struck me tonight.
Dustin Ludowski, a spokesperson for Central Maine Power, says the utility tried to factor affordability into the rate change proposal. He says the proposed plan includes necessary, substantial upgrades to the grid, including installation of secondary and backup lines into neighborhoods and installing smart devices that can reroute power along the backups should a line go down. He says now is the time to make upgrades to the grid to handle increasing demand from a growing population and new technology.
If we don't act now, as more Mainers adopt EVs and heat pumps, everybody will be paying more in the future.
The utility says it wants to raise its annual revenue by $427 million in order to hire hundreds of new employees and make the upgrades. The PUC is expected to take about a year to consider the rate case. If they approve it, ratepayers would see an average increase of $17 per month starting in October of next year, and that amount would rise gradually over 5 years. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Molly N. King.
And now it's time for Maine's Political Pulse, our regular analysis of state politics and government. In this installment, State House correspondent Kevin Miller speaks with political science professor Jim Melcher from the University of Maine Farmington about Governor Janet Mills' bid for the Democratic nomination to challenge Republican Senator Susan Collins next fall.
So thank you for taking time to speak with me, Professor Melcher. We've all been talking for many months now about whether Governor Mills would get in. Now that she has joined, does that change the landscape of the race in your view? And I'd like to start kind of with the big picture race here before we get to discussing the primary.
Oh, I think it very much does. If you're talking about the general election, you're talking about the best known Democrat in the state. She has high name recognition. She's served two terms as governor and been attorney general and been a state legislator. And none of the other candidates really have had much of it, except Graham Plattner's gained a lot of name recognition in the last few weeks, gotten a lot of national media attention. Maine also has a tendency to elect centrist candidates, and certainly a conservative listener would not think of Janet Mills as a centrist, but you know, she's perceived as being fairly close to the center, as Collins was and among some quarters likely still is, and those are the candidates that usually do well in Maine. Now, this year might be different. Maybe there is a sense of a need for change. On traditional metrics, I think this makes the race more challenging for Collins, but we don't really know yet whether this is going to be a traditional year or not.
Yeah, I kind of want to drill down on the political dynamics in the Democratic Party right now that you just talked about. Here you have Maine's first female governor, who pretty handily won her two races. She's a fierce supporter of abortion rights. She's been progressive on climate and renewable energy. She helped enact paid family medical leave and expanded health care coverage. It seems like in almost any other election year, Governor Mills would, in all likelihood, easily defeat any primary opponent in a statewide race like this, but potentially not this year, right?
That's correct. And one thing I would add that in terms of her national profile was her confrontation with President Trump at the White House, she really added to her national profile in that, in a way that I think is the thing that to people outside of Maine stands out the most.
One of the things that I find so interesting, what you just mentioned, back in February, Governor Mills became this almost embodiment of what many angry Democrats wanted more of when she told President Trump, see you in court, during that famous exchange at the White House. That's when this push to get her to challenge Collins really began. And that's when she says she started thinking about it. But now, just 8 months later, there are a lot of Democrats saying on social media that she's too old, that she's too establishment. What do you think happened there?
Part of this is reflecting something that's been bubbling up in the Maine Democratic Party for a while. If you think of the conflict between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton when they were running, and how deep some of those divisions were at the party caucuses, this to some extent reflects that there is a wing of the Democratic Party that thinks that Janet Mills has particularly not been as liberal on some newer issues. Whether that applies to the party as a whole, I'm not sure, but certainly among a lot of activists, there had always been some unease with her. And then the age piece, I think, plays into this. A lot of this is being driven by younger people who tend to want a more confrontational approach in politics, but that she is as old as she is something I think people see as a symbol of her being part of a long-standing establishment, that the Democratic Party needs to shake things up and change, they would say.
As soon as Mills announced on Tuesday, her campaign filed paperwork creating this joint fundraising committee with the official campaign arm of the Senate Democratic Caucus in D.C., the DSCC. We've seen some big national groups like Emily's List already come out and endorse Governor Mills. So she's really poised to bring in some big bucks from national sources, or at least to get their help during the campaign. So I guess my question is, you know, how do you think that dynamic of national groups spending money to support Mills during the primary, how will that be received by voters during what could be an anti-establishment election, at least in the Democratic primary?
Well, that could easily be something that her opponents, Wood and Plattner and all the rest of them, could easily bring up. That, you know, people in Maine like to say we're independent. We don't like being told what to do. Look how effective that line of attack was against the background checks that Michael Bloomberg and Every Town for Gun Safety supported, that people in Maine can become resentful of those things. I think a lot of Democrats that are familiar with Emily's List would probably give them a pass on this because they know they're dedicated to electing women to office. But the National Party being so involved in trying to get her to run, persuade her to run, on the paperwork, might make it look like, you know, outsiders want Janet Mills, but the rest of us, you know, we're independent Mainers. I mean, I can just see the commercials on that now.
Yeah, and we're certainly already seeing some of that from Graham Plattner and Jordan Wood, even before she announced that they were saying that they don't think Maine voters want Chuck Schumer to handpick their nominee. When Graham Plattner came into the race, he just created this big splash and seemed to really feed into this appetite that people had for something different.
And I think there was always going to be somebody in the Democratic primary in the kind of mood we have, where a lot of people want something different, that somebody was going to be a voice of an outsider younger candidate. And so far, it looks like that's being filled more than anybody else, by Graham Plattner. But I think all along, somebody was going to do that.
Do you think that Mills is still the presumed front runner in this Democratic primary?
Yes. I think she's got that name recognition. She's got so many connections. Now, on the other hand, maybe this really is a totally different climate and what's needed is an outsider. And the case that I keep thinking of in this is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She upset a congressman that I don't think anybody thought in New York City was going to lose. She got a lot of national attention. She got national donations. And, you know, it was, I don't want to say David versus Goliath, but certainly establishment versus newcomer, older versus younger. I think the AOC race demonstrates that sometimes the dynamic does not work in favor of the candidate that's got the traditional name recognition, if people feel like there's a reason to vote for something else. I think within the Democratic Party, there are places where that could happen, and this could be one of them. I think there's still a good chance this race goes to ranked choice voting. I think there's a good chance nobody's going to get 50% of the vote in this race. And so I would say she's the front runner, but she is most certainly not a prohibitive favorite.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 tomorrow morning, the Great Fire of 1775. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.